evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. This hour is sponsored by George Tertarian. George Tertarian. He writes, the sponsorship is in honor of the 1.5 million Armenians who were murdered by the Turkish government during the first genocide of the 20th century. Yesterday, April 24th, 2011, was the 96th anniversary. George is our first hour sponsor. So, how was your Easter? Did you, if you have kids, grandkids, nieces, nephews, did you take them to the various and sundry Easter egg hunts? That part of it is kind of fun. I've spent a little time explaining to Molly over the weekend why we feel it's okay to go on an Easter egg hunt, but it has no religious significance. You know, it has to do with spring and rebirth, and she got it. And we also went to strawberry picking. That's a good way to celebrate Easter. So I was thinking, you know, when you're picking strawberries, first of all, you're all bent over, kind of channeling your inner illegal immigrant. And I was thinking about the holiday. As I always think about the Christian aspects of these holidays that are that started out as pagan observances of changes in changes on Earth, changes in the weather, in the growing fields, and the changes in the landscape. All the holidays that were co-opted by the expanding Christian mythology all those years ago. So the Easter one really kind of gets to me because, I don't mean that in a bad way, I find it fascinating, because without Easter, there would be no Christianity. Without the resurrection, there's nothing. You know, forget the birth, forget the ministry, forget the crucifixion. All of that is just, you know, historical. It is the resurrection that gives Christianity its oomph, its punch. And without that, you know, like I said, without the resurrection, Christianity is just, you know, nice stories, kind of like Zeus and Thor and, you know, whoever. You know, for Christians, it is a key aspect. Obviously, you know this. Okay. But what gets me is the utterly, absolutely, disgustingly cynical use of the birth of Jesus and his ministry and you know, the whole Christian thing, the whole using the historical Jesus, this guy who wandered around the Middle East 2,000 years ago, you know, not unlike Gandhi wandering around India or Martin Luther King wandering around the United States South. You know, I mean, same thing, same damn thing, same thing. So here's this guy who happened to be, a teacher, a rabbi, and forswore any desire for riches and wandered around, was probably gay, not that there's anything wrong with that. If he wasn't, at least how many of his disciples? But there he is, wandering around the Middle East 2,000 years ago, talking a very simple message. And he made it very clear. That's the part of Christianity that stuns me when the Christians miss it. And they miss it by just thousands of miles. They miss it. This porker bastard Limbaugh. Did he make some comment today? I heard something about dragging Jesus into it again, you know? Like Limbaugh? Limbaugh? Limbaugh can't get through an eye of a needle, much less a camel. Forget it, Rush. I mean, you're not going anywhere. When you die, you're going to rot and become worm food and just, you know, whatever. But, and Franklin Graham? Franklin Graham jumping on the Donald Trump bandwagon? Just astonishing stuff. Mind-boggling stuff. Franklin Graham, of course, is a racist down to the bottoms of his feet. And that's why he, what did he say? He said he was interviewed by who? Over at ABC News. Christiane Amanpour interviewed him on This Week. And he said, when asked if he would choose Donald Trump as a candidate to support in the Republican dogfight, he replied, sure, yeah, sure. Now, this, and where it concerns Trump's jumping, Trump is such a rotten skank. And his jumping on this birther bandwagon now, and then Franklin Graham, Billy Graham is spinning in his grave. Well, he's not dead yet, is he? It doesn't make any difference. He's still spinning in his grave. Franklin Graham saying, well, you know, I think Donald Trump is onto something now about the birther thing. Because, you know, how can anyone named Barack Hussein Obama, right, Franklin, be a Christian? Doesn't make any difference what the man says. And that dark skin is a dead giveaway, right, Franklin? Huh? You pig. I can't tell you how much I hate the Christians. I think Jesus had a pretty good message. I've always been a fan of Jesus. I make no bones about that. Same as I'm a fan of, if that's the right word, of Dr. King, Gandhi, whoever. What did I hear of the weekend? That Gandhi was probably gay too? All right! 2 out of 3! I bet gay people in this country are just kind of sitting back going, you know, we've been trying to tell you this for God knows how long. You people just don't get it. You heteros just don't quite get it, do you? Whatever. I digress. So here's Franklin Graham endorsing, and this is the part of Christianity that kind of turns my stomach. It really does. This idea of redemption, that you can be a pig. You can cause people death, destruction, chaos, misery, pain, upset, eviction, lose everything. But at the last minute, by golly, if you're conscious, you can wipe it all away by turning your face to the priest or the minister and saying, I renounce my sins. I believe in Jesus, thud. And then you die, and according to the freaks in this crazy religion, then all of a sudden, the portals of heaven will open, and you're home free. All of that, I think, comes from the confession of the thief on the cross. On Jesus' left, I believe, and Jesus turned to him and said, this day you shall be with my Father in heaven. So that, I guess that's where that comes from. But Franklin Graham and Donald Trump, you talk about a marriage made in the deepest, darkest pits of the Christian hell. I can't think of one. I mean, that transcends everything I've ever come across. Here you have this bigoted bastard Franklin Graham who is just completely insane. Wouldn't you be if your father were Billy Graham and you had to live up to that? Can you imagine? I mean, look at George W. Bush. His old man was George Herbert Walker Bush. Look at George Herbert Walker Bush. His old man was Prescott. I mean, you can just keep working your way right up the family tree. So Franklin Graham, utterly, absolutely, completely insane. And Donald Trump, Donald Trump, whose favorite meal, I think, is himself. He loves himself so much. I want to eat me. I'm waiting for him to say that. I love me. I'm going to cut pieces of me off and eat me because I am divine. More on this when we come back. This just blew me away.
Underground in the sky, animals and birds who live nearby. Oh, mercy, mercy, mercy.
The days are bright. News Unfiltered, only with Mike Malone.
21 past the hour. Yeah, I just, while I deeply and truly admire and respect the teachings of Jesus of Nazareth, the probably gay rabbi who wandered around the Middle East 2,000 years ago trying to get people to stop the nonsense. Well, I deeply admire and respect that message. And the parables. The parables are great. The simplistic, and I don't mean that in a negative way, the simplistic way it has been recorded anyway, that Jesus spoke. Now, you have to go beyond the Gospels if you really want to find some interesting stuff. You've got to get into the Gnostic Gospels. And that doesn't mean you have to read them in their original Aramaic or Greek or whatever the hell they're written in. You can get some nice books about the Gnostic Gospels. And it's pretty cool stuff. It really is. No claims that I've come across in some of the early writings have anything to do with virgin births or, you know, that the virgin birth has been used so many times. It's just like got patches all over it. I mean, tell me a religion that hasn't used that at some point. The ark and all these stories that was, I don't know what that was. Well, that has nothing to do with Christianity, but you know, it's just nonsensical stuff. Like most religious texts use metaphors and analogies and wild ass stories to to scare the uninitiated and the initiated into not challenging anything. You want to be swallowed by a whale? No. So Easter, I digress. Easter to me is a very interesting holiday observance, religious observance. To watch Christians struggle with it is intriguing. Not that I'm some big ass observer sitting someplace that gave everybody under a magnifying glass. I don't mean to imply that. I just mean in casual path crossings with Christians on this particular holiday or observance. Especially when you started on Friday with the church service and the horror. And then on Sunday, hey, home free! You know, I mean, it's just amazing stuff. So when I hear people like Franklin Graham, who, if you want to take the Christian mythology up to its, for me anyway, expected level where it concerns Franklin Graham, he's obviously a man demon possessed. Now, science would just describe him as, I mean, he's got some issues about his old man, plus the fact that he's obviously delusional. He's obviously, I mean, classically paranoid. Oh my God, every Muslim on earth is after him. Schizophrenic, later. But if you go from him stay with his endorsement. That's what I was getting to a few minutes ago about this idea of redemption. Here's Donald Trump, who has destroyed more than he'll ever create. Oh, he's built some buildings. Woo! Big ass deal, right? Trump this, Trump that. He's a liar. He's a cheat. How many times has the guy gone bankrupt? Now, the people he's cheating is all right with me. You know, let these bankers and Trumps and people like that eat each other. That's fine. But he still has done it. His misogynist attitude, his contempt for women, the smirking, smarmy, I'm a rich guy, I can do anything I want, even run for president attitude. You know what Jesus would do? Well, you know what Jesus would do with a guy like that. If he were divine, he would just pinch his head off, kick it into hell so the demons could play soccer ball with it. Everybody knows that. Since we know that, Oh, gambling. Let's not forget the gambling and the boozing and the whoring and, you know, all the stuff that Trump is known for. So Franklin Graham, I guess using the Christian, escape valve of redemption, confession and redemption, Franklin Graham, I guess, looks into his crystal cathedral and or his crystal ball and says, oh yeah, well, Trump? Sure, yeah, you know. Yeah, I'm going to vote for him. Sure, why not? Yeah, I think he's got it right about Obama and where he was born and everything. I mean, this is sick. Sick stuff. But I've got a little bit more. So if you're not too sick, come on back.
Speakers, it'll be our secret.
Before the hour. This hour is sponsored by George Tertarian. His message, this sponsorship is in honor of the 1.5 million Armenians who were murdered by the Turkish government during the first genocide of the 20th century. Yesterday, April 24th, was the 96th anniversary. Franklin Graham. And Donald Trump. The never-ending, cynical, and disturbing misuse of the 2,000-year-old rabbi, Jesus, the distortion of his life, the distortion of everything about him, that's the part that is so irritating to me. I mean, it's just so irritating. And they dehumanized him in order to make him less powerful. That's the part that gets me. by taking away his humanity and giving him divinity, they make it crazy. You know, if the early church, the people who were writing about this rabbi, I think mostly of Paul, of course he did most of the damage, Timothy, some of the other, apostles, by denying the humanity and assigning this guy Jesus with divinity, if they were the ones that did it, and I think that they were part of this cult, they made him weaker. They made the followers weaker. You see, you can never emulate or live up to a sky spook, you know, a creature from the infinite, whatever, you know, the Son of God. Woo! Uh-oh, watch out. But you can emulate and live an honorable life by modeling the behavior of a real human being. Someone who does good work, someone who respects and honors the poor and the and Jesus, according to what was written about him, made it very clear many, many, many times about how he felt about rich people. Insofar as he was able to despise, he despised them. I mean, how do I know that? Because he mocked them constantly. I mean, forever. When his disciples would come to him and say, you know, what are we supposed to do? How, you know, what about wealth? You know, you've been to Sunday school. Do you think he was kidding? Do you think these remarks that were written down by this guy who said, I'm sure he was speaking metaphorically, easier to pass a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than a rich man to enter into the kingdom of heaven. Why did he say that? Because he didn't like rich people, hated them. He was a radical. He was a sandal wearing radical who was in favor of, he was a carpenter. He was in favor of the poor people, the powerless. So when you see some pig, an utter disgusting pig like Rush Limbaugh start to dump that on his brain dead audience, you know,
what would Jesus tell you about taxes?
You know, all this garbage that that he comes up with. I don't know. You know, Jesus was, if anything, a socialist. And if you want to get really into it, probably a communitarian. And if you want to take that next level, a communist! He was a small businessman, right? Oh, my God. But they just do it, and the assignment of supernatural divinity, I think, was calculated, it was evil, and it was necessary. Because the message was too, if it would have caught on, you see, if that message of suffer the, no, as you did to these, the least of you, you did it to me, you know, to clothe the naked and feed the hungry and visit those in the prisons and take care of your brothers and sisters and be nice and turn the other cheek. When do you hear an evangelical preacher talking that? You don't. Ever. Because the whole message, the whole thing has been so distorted, so corrupted, so turned into dirt. And all the preachers who just get wealthy. I live here in the buckle of the Bible Belt, and as we travel out through rural Georgia like we did on Saturday to go pick strawberries at one of these huge strawberry farms. And as we drive out, you know, we drive past these monuments to self-adulation, these monuments to fear and trembling and disgust and money and avarice and greed and, you know, all that stuff. They're called churches. Great big-ass churches. I mean, woo! You haven't seen churches like until you've been in the South. I'm not talking about cathedrals. I know up north and northeast, you know, you got all these big old Catholic or mostly Catholic cathedrals. You don't find those here in the South so much, but what you do find are these huge temples of insanity that are the Protestant churches, Methodist and Baptist and Presbyterian and so on and so forth. And every time we drive by one of those, you know, I used to, I don't anymore. There's nothing worse than unnecessary repetition, right? But I used to bring it up with Kathy. Just, you know, can you imagine that building, that land, the construction must have run $7-8 million, maybe 10. That is so anti-Jesus. It just is. But it doesn't matter. You know, the whole Christ story has nothing to do with salvation. Nothing. Has to do now with power. Has to do with power, ego, greed. What's this what is it? Prosperity gospel? Prosperity gospel. Oh, God. That's another one we have here in the South. Woo! Do we have them in the South? You know, that God, these half-witted morons, black and white, who stand up in front of the terminally brain dead and say, you know, God or Jesus never wants you to be poor. Really? Really? Is that? Oh, I see. Okay. And you have all these big churches now, these mega churches with investment clubs. Oh, my God. An investment club. prosperity gospel. Hallelujah. They really did. They took a perfectly good story. Not the divine part, not the Christmas in the Middle East when it's supposed to be icy ass cold. Oh no, shepherds were abiding their flocks. You know, all that crapola. Not that. But you know, here it is, you know, story of this guy. You can call him anything you want. You can give him a name. Every generation, or at least every 10th generation, or every 100th generation produces somebody like this, you know, who's wise, compassionate, understanding. The kind of people that the Christians and the capitalists and the conservatives and the teabaggers hate. Are you kidding me? Ayn Rand hated that kind of stuff. Now, of course, Ayn Rand was an atheist, but she was the worst kind of atheist. It was not so much that she hated religion, she hated the teachings. She hated the idea that somewhere locked in to these religions, it's gone now, but somewhere locked into them was the idea of compassion, justice, understanding, love. Oh, she hated that. So it was, you know, Ayn Rand is the type that gives atheists a horrible name. You know, I cast her out. I cast her out of atheism. Get out! Be gone! I'll send her soul into the bodies of pigs is what I'll do. But it is so sad to me to see the perversion that has occurred around this historical figure, this Palestinian Jew who walked around, you know, a couple thousand years ago, just trying to explain to people, you know, you don't have to live like this. You know, you can elevate your vision. You can do that if you want to. And here's how you do it. And it was all based on the Easter Bunny. Hide the roaches and the way you feel. Okay, that's enough. We'll be right back.
And I understand there's nothing to prove to the world. There's nothing to prove to the world. There's nothing to rebel against when you get home. I understand. Use the cuss words like you like to use, and think about taking the high road. Yeah, the high road, like you've always been shown. And think about what would Jesus do? What would Jesus do? What would Jesus do? He'd get a haircut and a real job. There's nothing to prove.
Radio right from the left. It's more Mike Malone.
Ten before the hour. Last one, Mark in Harlem. Mike, in the true spirit of Christianity, Cardinal Timothy Dolan had anti-gay marriage leaflets distributed during the Holiest Mass and all of Catholicdom Easter Sunday. During blanking mass, he was countering a protest going on outside, I assume. Of course. Oh, Lord have mercy. Okay. This hour has been sponsored by George Tutarian. He offers the sponsorship in honor of the 1.5 million Armenians who were murdered by the Turkish government during the first genocide of the 20th century. Yesterday was the 96th anniversary of that slaughter. The New York Times had an enormous article today, more WikiLeaks documents and other, 700 or 800? Daily Telegraph, NPR, El País in Spain, Le Monde in France, Der Spiegel in Germany, La Repubblica, I guess that's, what is that, Italian? 779 documents from the WikiLeaks website about Guantanamo and what the U.S. knew and didn't know and what they did, what we did. The United States government, in the hands of the Bush crime family, knew that so many of these Guantanamo detainees were innocent, and yet the tortures went on. Anyway, some of the torture went on as experiments in how to break down the Muslim resistance, the mental resistance, how to break it. Just like various nationalities have practiced that that technique on each other, Asians on white or Europeans on Asians, blacks on browns on whites on everybody. You know, I mean, come on, you know what I'm talking about. Different cultures, different racial groups. But. For the United States, for Bush and Cheney and all the people responsible for the torture to join in the ranks of people like Dr. Joseph Mengele, who used live subjects for his torture experiments, his experiments in how much the human organism could stand various types of efforts to understand the extremes to which the human body would still respond before it deteriorated into something other than a human body. Physical, mental, psychological. So apparently we borrowed from that model and went to work on the Muslim mindset, how to utterly shatter. I mean, shatter like glass. Utterly shatter any resistance to anything. Orwell's Room 101. How do you find each individual's Room 101? With Winston Smith, it was rats. With so many detainees, Muslim detainees, it was sexual humiliation. On and on and on. Some of the people that Dick Cheney referred to as the worst of the worst included innocent drivers, farmers, chefs who have been rounded up as part of, according to WikiLeaks, what they released, frantic intelligence gathering in war zones. And then people detained for years due to mistaken identity or simply for being in the wrong place at the wrong time. That's according to the Daily Telegraph. The British newspaper said that overall U.S. military analysts considered only 220 of the people ever detained at Guantanamo to be dangerous. It's just astonishing that this chapter has not been written about recent U.S. derangement, and I don't know that it ever will. It may be at some point, but I think it's going to take a smash. Like the smash that occurred in, for different reasons, different time, different place, different levels of atrocities, of course, but the smash that occurred to Germany and Japan and Italy to a lesser degree. The United States is going to have to be smashed so hard and broken into so many pieces in order for, and I'm not advocating that necessarily, I'm just saying for that story to come out about what happened at the highest levels of our government. Did we have death camps? No, of course we didn't. Did we have death marches? No, of course we didn't. We were much more focused. We took individuals because we were after something. We were after, among other things, knowledge. How do you shatter the Muslim mind? A mind that sees death and martyrdom as a reward. You see, the Western mind, and in so many instances, the Asian mind never really saw it that way. You know, resist, resist, resist. But to the Muslim, according to documents released and insights produced, if you are in jihad, if you are in holy war, then martyrdom is a reward. Death is okay. Suicide bombing, you betcha. You don't very often, if ever, find a Christian suicide bomber, do you? For lots of reasons. So anyway, part of what was going on, according to this new document release, and, you know, you can go to nytimes.com. I don't know. I'm a subscriber to the newspaper, so I've got, you know, I can wander all over the site. I don't know their new restrictions, if you can get to this. But you should try. It was a massive, one of the biggest stories I've ever seen in the New York Times. And it's all based on just another 780 documents. Still hundreds of thousands of documents about stuff to go. We'll be right back. Program. This hour is sponsored by Donna Kidby. Donna, thank you. Appreciate the sponsorship. U.S. new Guantanamo detainees were innocent. It's of course it's all over the global press now. The French news agency story that I have here came from the Hindustan Times. It's all over Europe. It's all over Asia, the Middle East. The horror of this, of course, is that, well, it's two-pronged, I think. The horror of the actual action that was taken by the Bush crime family, and the perversion of the justice or the legal system in this country to write memos and presidential let's cover his ass documents that installed torture as a form of official U.S. policy. Now, we talked about this during the last administration that operated Guantanamo, just like this one is. The torture has been used by everybody against everybody since probably Neanderthals were crushed by the Homo sapiens or something. It's always been, torture has been the official policy of religious organizations for millennia. The Christian religion had no problem with torture of all sorts. Burnings, hangings, disembowelings, dismemberings, I mean, anything, you name it. The Inquisition had a way of performing it. But, you know, this is not the 15th century. This is, I think, the 21st. And to install torture as a form of official U.S. policy, or any official German policy, official Italian policy, you know, whatever, is it's hard for me to comprehend that. The second part that's hard to comprehend is this association with using torture as an experimental lab, using torture techniques. And I don't care what you call it. You can call it sensory deprivation. You can call it enhanced interrogation. Use any, we call it chicken soup if you want to. I don't care. It's still torture. We know what torture is. Of course we do. And to conduct some of these activities, these torturing of Muslim detainees, as though they were, or as if they were, simply experiments. Let's see what happens if we do this. Now, there were pamphlets written, I seem to remember, official directives on how to work with Muslim detainees. This was before the torture stuff became well known. How to humiliate them by having them questioned by female interrogators, stripping them nude in front of women, assaulting or threatened to assault their holy texts. I mean, you know, it doesn't take a Dick Cheney to figure out how to do this kind of stuff. You don't have to be a genius to, I mean, you do have to have education, but you don't have to be a genius to figure out where someone's psychological weak points are, especially if you have them in a 24-hour confinement situation where they're utterly and absolutely, totally, completely powerless, and you are utterly and absolutely and totally and completely powerful. It doesn't take long until you can, especially if you've had training in, hell, just essential elementary psychology. A little bit of abnormal psych probably would help out. Studying some of the reports that came out of Nazi Germany or Soviet, Stalinist Soviet Union, some of these techniques, North Korea, how to break utterly and absolutely a person's will to resist. And then to observe and take notes. Now, back in the days of the Bush crime family, you know, we used to talk, we talked about this a lot, that we had degenerated into that sort of a government. Anything in our documents about the potential for justice or the potential for equal rights or human rights or dignity washed down the commode, gone forever. How do you reconcile your founding documents, as flawed as they were, with 235 years later, you make torture and the debasement of human beings part of your official policy, knowing full well that the people you were torturing were not the people, if any such people existed, who came and bombed your country? Those people are all dead. They died in the plane crashes, didn't they? The suicide bombers. So what you are doing is sending out a net to round up as many people as you can. And the net was not sent to Germany, even though that's where a lot of the plotters plotted. It wasn't sent to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, or Milwaukee, Wisconsin, or Los Angeles, or Atlanta, which is where a lot of these people, if you want to believe the official story, worked out their plans. No. You go to a place like Afghanistan, where the business partners of the Bush crime family have set up, the Saudis, have set up schools allegedly teaching people terror tactics. And they set them up with the money that is partly comes from the sale of oil, which goes into SUVs and Humvees and all kinds of craziness that Americans were driving over the past 30 years, right? It's insane. The whole thing, the whole circle is crazy. It's a crazy circle. But the WikiLeaks documents now, or not the WikiLeaks, but the documents being released through the WikiLeaks website are showing the sickness. If anybody wants to look, a lot of people don't look. Oh, come on, Malloy, goddamn, Guantanamo, that was so last administration. Afghanistan, what's that? Iraq, oh, that war ended years ago. So, you know, the interest is not there. It's just not there. We don't care. You know, Americans don't care. Too busy worrying about $5 a gallon gas and when Jesus is coming back, you know, and how are the Jews and the Muslims doing in the Palestinian, in the occupied territories in Israel? Who killed who last weekend? What? Oh, they ambushed a bunch of Jews. Oh, they ambushed a bunch of Palestinians. Oh, well, what do you know? But Iraq, Afghanistan, torture, Guantanamo, Abu Ghraib. Lindy, what was her name? England? Pregnant? Great big piles of brown Muslim bodies in hallways, naked men piled on top of each other. Humiliation, what did Rush Limbaugh call it? Oh, it was like a fraternity hazing. Really? Well, you see, you know, so it's all gone. So the WikiLeaks things now, The what is being revealed, even though the New York Times starts the story on the front page and then inside has a 4-page spread. Who cares? Well, I mean, who cares in this country? The rest of the world is paying very close attention to this. And the next time the United States of America starts to stand up on its hind legs and talk about human rights, somebody's going to come up and spit right in our faces.
They looked around, but they didn't see no one in my country. Tis of they to take swings at each other on the talk show TV. Why don't you just go ahead?
Because liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
The hour. This hour is being sponsored by Donna Kidby. Thank you, Donna. According to the New York Times this morning, the best documented case of an abusive interrogation where the detainee survived, there is no verifiable record of how many we have killed. Our torturers, our CIA private contractors, how many we've drowned, how many we've hanged, how many have hanged themselves as an act of suicide. What do we call that? They started calling that what kind of warfare? Damn it, I can't think of the term. Our torturers had the audacity to say it was committing suicide. Was a form of warfare against the torturers. It was, I forget the term. Somebody will email it to me when it's too late. That's what they accuse now the Palestinians of doing. But I don't want to digress. According to the New York Times, the best documented case of an abusive interrogation, at Guantanamo was the questioning in 2002 and 2003 of Mohammed Qahtani, a Saudi believed to have been a participant in the September 11th plot. Asymmetrical warfare. That's what it is. Thanks to Verblin. Asymmetrical warfare. Qahtani was leashed like a dog, sexually humiliated. It doesn't go into details, obviously. The New York Times being a family newspaper, I guess. Maybe it's not. Sexually humiliated, forced to urinate on himself. On and on and on. Gattani's file noted, quote, although publicly released records alleged detainee was subject to harsh interrogation techniques in the early stages of detention, his confessions appear to be true and are corroborated in reporting from other sources, end quote. Of course, a number of prisoners confessed to anything. In order, as they have since admitted, as you would, as I would, confess to anything. There is a breaking point I would guess probably 99.9% of people. I'm not saying that not everyone can be broken, although I do believe that everyone can be broken given enough time and finding the right technique to break that person's will to resist. Resist what? Resist lying about himself, lying about anything in order to escape the torture. In a statement, the Obama administration said that the Obama and Bush administrations had, quote, made every effort to act with the utmost care and diligence in transferring detainees from Guantanamo. Both administrations have made the protection of American citizens the top priority, and we are concerned that the disclosure of these documents could be damaging to those efforts, end quote. Such a classic example of either utter and absolute cynicism on the part of the person speaking for the government or a look into the crazed mindset of now the Obama administration. When the statement, both administrations have made the protection of American citizens a top priority. No. American citizens now have been put at danger. Extreme danger, because the whole world knows that our government, and therefore us, because we have a cough-cough, nudge-nudge, a freely elected system where the best person wins, there's not an American on earth now who is not subject to capture, torture, beheading, whatever. And there is, and as retaliation. And what happens if an American is captured? It's the Obama administration. Do they issue all sorts of diplomatic statements saying this must not continue? These Americans must be released. You know, American exceptionalism may have worked during the time when we had all the guns and all the bombs and all the nukes, but it doesn't work anymore. You know, Americans, not that there was any truth to it anyway. I mean, exceptionalism, to take one group of people and say, well, they're exceptional, is delusional. Not only is it self-delusional, but eventually it comes back and rips your face off and then kills you. But more when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Here comes the helicopter.
end your day screaming with Mike Malloy.
How many kids they've murdered?
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Donna Kidby. Couple of emails here. This is from Chris. He writes, Mike, I swore off 2 weeks ago and gave my churning stomach a rest after hearing Obama's speech in California that ended with, yes, we can. I wanted to vomit. But in the wee hours this morning, I turned on the Wi-Fi next to my bed and caught the last 10 minutes or so of your conversation with that fellow and heard you say you were ready to look elsewhere for a remedy to our problems. And I heaved a sigh of relief. Surely you folks on that cruise in February talked to Turkey about all this. I know that Mike Malloy is expressing change from other than the traitor in the White House. I can only hope you all have a plan to replace Obama. From his first few weeks in the White House, my gut has told me he is one of them. My gut also tells me there are millions like me. So Godspeed to those of you who can get the ball rolling, and soon. I'm 86 and scared as hell, living on Social Security with food prices and all other costs going sky high. Chris. I wish I wish I had something to do, Chris, with getting the ball rolling. But I'm afraid I don't. And I don't know about other people on that cruise. There were certainly some people there with a lot more power and influence than I would ever hope to have or would want. I'm not a big believer in power and influence, you know? I really am not. It seems almost like, you know, influencing other people seems almost like a form of psychic rape. You understand what I mean by that? Or psychological rape? I have, as much as I can, and it has never been enough, tried to study the people who historically, men and women who have tried to enlighten their generation and subsequently future generations by virtue of the fact that what they had to say was written down and so on and so forth. But I found that they were stating a case. They were just saying, look, take a look at this. And I think the real thinkers never say, think this way. I think people with who really have a message don't, you know, they don't try to build a following or a constituency or certainly not consciously, do they? I don't think so. So to me, power or influence is dangerous, and eventually it destroys itself. And anything that's close to it. Really, I believe that. I do. You know, I think we all should try to, as Wavy Gravy said, feed each other. But on the other hand, feeding each other is not the same as influencing or leading or demonstrating power. Right? Does that make any sense? Too vague. Too vague, Malloy. You're way too vague. This is from Carolyn. Hello, Mike. Interesting but unsurprising that Paul Ryan, the congressman, was missing in action on the Sunday shows yesterday. Could it be that he couldn't show his red face because the news is finally out there regarding the survivor Social Security benefits he collected as a teenager and parlayed into a college education? This guy's a real piece of work. He collected his survivor benefits and used the funds to attend out-of-state college in Ohio, and then got internships and went straight into government work. He has never even had a real job, ever. These pathetic Ayn Rand freaks are the last straw. During the time when young Paul Ryan was collecting his Social Security funds, I was paying Reagan's double FICA, and I was also an independent contractor and paying both sides. I had to borrow money to cover those FICA payments. I really hope you will talk about Republican hypocrisy. Paul Ryan should pay back the benefits he wants to deny others. Carolyn and her last name. Well, we talk about Republican hypocrisy all the time, Carolyn, and it needs to be, yeah, you're absolutely right. It needs to be talked about all the time by mainstream media. We're not mainstream media. This little program with its 37 listeners that costs 25 cents to subscribe to per show, this is damn sure not mainstream media. But we talk about it all the time. Republican hypocrisy. It's too bad that the programs with, or the newspapers or the magazine articles with huge viewership or listenership or readership don't do the same. Ayn Rand was on Medicare, took advantage of it in the 50s. And Medicaid, I think, or no, Social Security and Medicare. Sure. But that is that, you know, that is the way of hypocrites. And going back to, Jesus, the, carpenter, the rabbi, you know, the guy who tried to bring a little bit of enlightenment, probably heavily influenced by the Buddha, but, if I remember, he assigned some of the hottest regions of hell to the hypocrites. You know, when you're on a truth quest, no matter who you are, if you're Jesus or the Buddha or Muhammad or, yeah, it doesn't make any difference, Gandhi or Walt Disney, you know, when you're on a truth quest, hypocrisy is the worst possible thing you can come across. You know, people who, it's gotten into the vernacular now, people who talk the talk, but they don't walk the walk. You know what I'm talking about. So, Republican hypocrisy, yeah, Carolyn, it's an ongoing theme of this program. Kate Petrini, our education affairs correspondent. Hi, Mike. Random thought on this rainy Monday morning. As I was filing away our tax return information for 2010, I burst out laughing. Mike, the minuscule amounts we entered into those IRS forms are hilarious. But oh no, the IRS needs to know that I contributed a few $100 to a health savings account. It's critical that they know I earned $90 in interest on a savings account. And they absolutely have to keep track of my stunning five-figure salary. All of this data is very, very important to the workings of the U.S. government. I mean, we have a deficit that needs to be eliminated. Meanwhile, GE enters literally billions of dollars on their IRS forms, and they pay nothing. What could be more ridiculous than that? The fact that the used and abused American worker continues to vote in favor of maintaining this Gilded Age status quo. That's what. Okay. Yeah, we have way surpassed the income disparity of the so-called Gilded Age around the turn of the last century. It's just an obscenity. If ever there was, this is more like the Middle Ages or the medieval times now. If ever there was, a reason to fully understand the unfairness of capitalism and its ultimate goal, the ultimate goal or plan or operating system of capitalism, it's now. I mean, take a look at it. With the, you know, what is visible to anyone who wants to see is how capitalism really, really works. Just take a look at this country. Take a look at the unemployment. Take a look at the devastated cities. Take a look at the industries that no longer exist. You can make an argument that they shouldn't have existed to begin with, but that's a different argument. Capitalism will exploit everything it touches. Human potential, it's nothing. It's meat into the grinder. It doesn't mean anything. It means nothing. Truth, justice, honor, it's nothing. Those are words. Nothing. Capitalism is about one thing and one thing only, to wring as much profit as possible from whatever it is that's going on, whatever it is you're doing. Oh, I know it's much more complicated than that, but the bottom line is profit above all else. People, national boundaries, economic systems, philosophical conceptions, all of it is garbage, garbage in the face of capitalism.
Population keeps on bleeding, nation bleeding, still more bleeding. Life is funny, skies are sunny, bees make honey.
This hour has been sponsored by Donna Kidby. Thanks, Donna. We appreciate that very much. Regarding torture, I want to go back to that for a second. The WikiLeaks information, another couple of hundred documents released at their website and picked up by the New York Times and other publications around the globe. Some of the revelations about torture, why it was used, and what the torturers, our people, what the torturers were looking for. Not just information, but also what techniques would work. What torture techniques would work? Let me quote here. This is John McCain. McCain, as you know, was shot down over Hanoi. Was it Hanoi? In August of 1968, a program of, this is from Wikipedia. In August of 1968, a program of severe torture began on McCain at the same time as he was suffering from dysentery. And McCain made an anti-American propaganda, quote, confession, end quote. He has always felt that his statement was dishonorable, but as he would later write, quote, I had learned what we all learned over there. Every man has his breaking point. I had reached mine, end quote. The torture on McCain, of course, continued. Irish Dave sent that to me, and just having to do with what we used at Guantanamo, and nobody really knows except the CIA operatives and the Bush crime family operatives, and possibly now the Obama operatives, if this part of it is still going on. What sort of torture techniques were used in the countries to which we renditioned people for questioning? Egypt, Libya, Syria, Saudi Arabia. Some countries in South Central Asia. Indonesia. And then, of course, the places offshore, off Diego Garcia, the islands in the Indian Ocean. Administered, I think, still. Are they still administered by the British? I'm not sure. But apparently there were a couple of naval vessels. I don't know if they were American naval vessels there or some other country, where torture techniques were also applied. We were more than willing to do business with these oppressive regimes in the Middle East and Northern Africa, as long as two things were understood. If they had oil, we would get it. And B, when the time came for us to send people we wanted tortured, they would be tortured without the word torture ever having appear, of course. But the Egyptians were well known for that. Mubarak's secret detention centers. The Israelis are extremely good at torture, I understand. I mean, what do I know, right? Only what I read in the paper, huh? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. The Syrians are real good at torture. So the Bush crime family would take advantage of that. You know, you can't have all the torture going on in Cuba or Afghanistan or Pakistan. You know, you've got to farm it out. You can't have all of the deaths occurring in packing crates in the middle of the desert in Afghanistan. You've got to spread the death out. You can't have all the nude Muslim men stacked in piles and committing simulated homosexual sex on each other. You've got to spread it out a bit, right? I wonder if the American public, I know the American public does not want to know. Can you imagine lining up, getting all the teabaggers and the Republicans and the right-wingers and the Christian evangelical preachers who supported this reign of terror during the Bush years, get them all in a room, big room, have to be a big room, all right, stadium, and under penalty of being lashed in public, they would have to sit and listen to the testimony, look at the videos that you and I will probably never see unless some enterprising soul releases them, the torture videos. I don't know. Would you want to see that? I don't think I could. I mean, you know, everybody has their breaking point. Everyone also has their limits as to what they can absorb, you know, visually, orally, orally. You know, listening to screams and watching dismemberings and so on and so forth, I don't think so. But subject the people who were the most vocal in supporting the Bush crime family's reign of terror and error, and force them to listen to what they were advocating and supporting, and you know, saying it was in so many words, it was God's will. I wonder how many of them would, never mind. All right, break here. We'll be back right after the top of the hour. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program. Later on tonight or tomorrow, probably, we will have at our website a video that was sent to me from someone in Syria. I'm just going to post the video. It is difficult to watch. Runs about 10 minutes. If you want to check it out, it just comes with heavy-duty warning. This hour is sponsored by, let me see. This is what the message says. There's a rumor that Mike Malloy is coming to the West Coast. Can we hold a car wash fundraiser to get you to stop also in L.A.? You would meet people like Nicholas 62, Rita, Tim, Amy, David, Stephen, Karen, and many, many more. Please come to L.A., Mike. It's from Debbie. Debbie is our sponsor. I guess you're referring to July 26th? Something like that in Seattle, our yearly pilgrimage to the holy city of Seattle. That is absolutely required of people of my sect. We have to make at least one, actually only one journey to Seattle in a lifetime, but for the ones that are truly seeking enlightenment, you have to go to Seattle yearly. So, sometime in July. I don't know, Debbie. I don't know if we can do. It would be nice if KTLK would do something and invite us out, but not yet. We've only been on the station, County Air America, what, Kathy? 8 years? Prairie 2. In response to an ever-growing mountain of concern coming in emails, you haven't written any, you haven't read anything from Prairie 2. Did he abandon your program? Have you decided, you know, blah, blah, blah. No. Just other things, I guess. Subject line, do you hear that chewing sound? This is from Prairie 2. Anytime I see a subject line like that, I'm damn sure going to open the email. Prairie 2 writes, have you got any comments from people pointing out that I was wrong when I told people not to rush out and buy gold when it was $1,200 and now it's $1,500 an ounce? First of all, I don't give financial advice except to buy canned goods because all advice is wrong eventually. That is, it's like the weather. If you don't like it, wait 10 minutes, blah, blah, blah. I've always said about gold, if you have extra money and you want some insurance against the worst possible scenario, then sure, buy some. But don't kid yourself that you know the future price of anything. When gold was $1,200 an ounce, the Fed hadn't printed $1 trillion and pumped it into the markets by buying treasuries from rich people. It was their stated intention to create inflation to avoid massive deflation. There was no consensus that it was going to work. We could be looking at $300 an ounce gold now instead of a $300 gain. It's easy to say we're going to have lots and lots of inflation because hardly anybody can remember anything else. It's been 80 years since 1930. For most people, the Great Depression is as remote as the Crusades. I'm going to explain deflation again, and I'll try not to put you to sleep. Drink some coffee or maybe just keep these images in mind to stay awake. Empty store shelves, food riots, mass panic, cities burning, and indiscriminate warfare coming to a town near you. The U.S. dollar, and in fact all modern currency, is just an accounting sheet that tallies debt. We call this the fractional reserve banking system, where almost all money is created by the issuance of debt. If debtors begin to default in a systematic way like they did after the subprime collapse in 2008, it can take so much money out of the system so fast that the system collapses. Most dollars then disappear as they only existed on the balance sheets of the suddenly extinct banks, and the remaining dollars must cover more assets and prices plummet uncontrollably, searching for equilibrium. Keep in mind, the plastic credit or ATM card in your wallet is just that. Plastic. The problem is that our economy has been systematically stripped of all its productive components that have been sold to China for a quick buck. What economy that we have left is dominated by people making hundreds of billions a year from pushing paper around. In order to maintain the level of income that they've become accustomed to, they continue to hollow out what is left like termites in the wall. The subprime crisis, by comparison, only represented a small fraction of the loans that are based in inflated asset prices. Most of the rest of the U.S. is similarly leveraged, and it will all start coming due in 2012. There are trillions of subprime loans, or trillions of dollars in subprime loans that haven't hit the balloon payment stage. There are trillions in commercial loans that are all coming due less than 5 years after the crash. Add trillions of corporate junk bonds left from all the mergers and acquisitions that sold 50,000 factories to China. All of this starts coming due in a matter of months. The majority of U.S. financial assets are controlled by five large banks. There used to be quite a few more banks, in case you don't remember, before 2008. The ones that were bailed out were called the too-big-to-fail banks. And they have only gotten bigger and more unsound since then. Giant termite colonies would be a better name. Six-legged Wall Street bankers just nibbling away at the beams that hold everything up. A deflationary collapse could still happen, despite all the new money being printed by the Federal Reserve, because even the new money is just debt based on collateral of no real value. The Dodd-Frank law does, in theory, give the Obama administration the tools to step in and take control before everything collapses completely. The gold bugs, people who think that gold is the answer to all things, the gold bugs are predicting $8,000 an ounce for gold. But deflation could just as easily result in $80 an ounce gold instead. Do you listen to the gold bugs? Or the termites chewing in the ceiling beams? Your guess is as good as mine. PrairieNumeral2.com. Ooh. Yeah, nobody talks about that. I have a good friend who was a big-time developer during the, and a conscientious one, I have to say, during the craziness of the last 5 years of the Clinton administration, the first 5 years of the Bush crime family operation in this country. And he pointed out to me, as has Perry too over the years, the commercial paper, the commercial loans. You see the result of this collapsing, the commercial lending institution, or what am I trying to say? The people who receive these huge commercial loans, you see it every time you drive around wherever you live. Look at the abandoned shopping malls, or go into one of these malls and look at the stores that are closed down. Look at the parking lots of these huge shopping malls. Look at the parking lots on a Saturday when people used to go spend money. You know, all that home equity money and the easy credit money, and the parking lots were jammed. You remember this, don't you? I realize it was a long time ago. It was 3 years ago. That's a lifetime, right? In this society, that's a lifetime. All right, 4 years ago. But all of a sudden, oh, and look at all the empty skyscrapers and office buildings and office parks. What does all that mean? Well, like Prairie 2 wrote, put your ear close to the wall and listen to that sound that you hear and tell me what you think that sounds like.
your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
Better speak to the powers that be today. Hey Joe, where you going with that gun in your hand? You can take your revenge, but you'll still feel bad. There must be more to life than lucky strikes and some unlucky ones.
22 past the hour. This hour is sponsored by Debbie. Her message, there's a rumor that Mike Malloy is coming to the West Coast. Can we hold a car wash fundraiser to get you to, I don't know why that makes me laugh, get you also to stop at L.A.? You would meet people like Nicholas, 62, Rita, Tim, Amy, David, Stephen, Karen, and many, many more. Please come to L.A., Mike. Wasn't that a song? Please come to... That's a Jimmy Buffett song. What was that song? Is that Jimmy Buffett? No, that's not the way it goes. Kathy's singing in there. Please come to someplace. Oh, well, somebody will send me the title. I would love to do it, Debbie. Thanks for sponsoring the hour. But I just don't know how. Like I say, send an email to KTLK. See if they're interested. We have two Christians and a Jew who went berserk on Sunday. Lindsey Graham, Republican from South Carolina, John McCain, Republican from Arizona, and Joe Lieberman, Republican from Connecticut. They all call for the straight-up, straight-ahead murder of Gaddafi. Just go kill him. Just go kill him. I wonder what the oil companies, the American and British-based oil companies that just, I mean, my God, they just worked out a deal with Gaddafi. You know, that was the release of the Lockerbie bomber in return for oil, you know, oil contracts. Everything, it's all about money. None of it is about God or Jesus or Moses or truth or justice or, you know, no. It's all about money. And apparently Lieberman is insane. McCain has been tortured so badly that it's a wonder he can hold two thoughts at the same time. And Lindsey Graham's from South Carolina, that speaks volumes. But for these, all three of them, you talk about the three musketeers, all three of these guys on Sunday calling for the murder of Gaddafi. Is that right? Since 5 weeks of bombing have failed to bring about Gaddafi's downfall, which is what the only thing they're interested in. They want somebody in there who will be more willing to work with the oil companies, the American and transnational corporate capitalists, you know, British, American, whoever, especially American. And Gaddafi's replacement, or Gaddafi, or however you want to pronounce it, his replacement surely would be easier to work with and not quite as psycho. And if he's going to be psycho, it'd be more of a Christian-Jewish psycho, like Lieberman and Lindsey Graham and John McCain, and less like, a desert Bedouin Muslim psycho, like Gaddafi. But Lieberman was a vice presidential candidate on the Democratic ticket. Remember that? Oh, my God. Gore Lieberman. Ah, that's like McCain Palin. Oh, you talk about being forced to accept somebody. Anyway, Lieberman said... He declared, quote, NATO has got to start thinking about whether they want to more directly target Gaddafi and his family. Yeah, kill them all. Goddamn right. Kill them all. Right, Joe? Right, Holy Joe? Just get them all. Just kind of like Joshua in the Battle of Jericho, right? Just kill everybody. Just butcher the bastards. Let the desert run red with their blood. Right? Right, Joe? Huh, Joe? Lieberman declared that the UN resolution justified a policy of assassination on the grounds that it would protect the civilian population. Oh, give me a break, Lieberman, for God's sake. Lindsey Graham told CNN, right now there's just not enough momentum by the rebels. So my recommendation to NATO and the administration is to cut the head of the snake off. Go to Tripoli. Start bombing Gaddafi's inner circle, their compounds, their military headquarters, their mamas, their aunties, their grandmothers, their cousins, their nieces, and, you know, like in the Bible. That's what we need to do. We really do. Before the hour, sponsored by Debbie Newell, who writes, there's a rumor that Mike Malloy is coming to the West Coast. Can we hold a car wash fundraiser to get you to stop? Also in L.A. You'd meet people like Nicholas, 62, Rita, Tim, Amy, David, Stephen, Karen, and many, many more. Please come to L.A. Thanks for the sponsorship, Debbie. And thanks everybody who wrote in. It was Loggins and Messina, or Jim Messina, I guess, and or Dave Loggins. Oh, Christ, I don't know. Ellen in San Francisco wrote, Dave Loggins, covered by lots of other people, Willie Nelson, Joan Baez, Kenny Chesney, Reba McEntire. Good song. Meanwhile, please come to San Francisco. It's been a while since I've been there. What's it been, about 3 years? 2 years? Well, Green 960, if they'll buy me a plane ticket. To listen to or to read, I did not spend any time this Sunday. Oh, these guys were on Easter Sunday, right? State of the Union and these three, McCain, Lieberman, and Lindsey Graham, calling for the assassination of Gaddafi, and of course Lieberman goes further and says murder Gaddafi and his family. I don't know, maybe that's a good idea, huh? Just shoot the sons of bitches, right? If they get in the way, shoot them. I mean, Gaddafi obviously is an insane mass killer, isn't he? I mean, is he or isn't he? I don't know. 41 years as the dictator of Libya. All the people that his military is now shooting, killing, the ones that they take alive are going to be tortured in a way that will be totally unknown to the so-called Western mind. So is that a good idea? There's just something about it, right? Something about seeing three U.S. senators going on, and two of them Christians, and making the statement on Easter Sunday, go kill him. Kill him, kill him, kill him, kill him, kill his family. The Christians say kill him. The Jewish guy says kill him and his family. And I think therein lies the difference between Christians and Jews, you know. The Christians will say kill him. The Jew will say kill him and his family and his offspring and burn his fields and slaughter his sheep and set fire to anything he ever owned and try to track down his mom and them and get them too. I mean, it's madness, isn't it? I mean, I don't know. Is it or isn't it? I've completely been cut loose. I have no bearings anymore that I can turn to. I really don't. And say, hey, that is bad U.S. policy. I mean, to me, the whole thing is horrible when you get right down to it. Everything. But is it bad? I mean, Gaddafi, is he a bad man? I've got a video that I've been looking at during the breaks that somebody in Syria sent to me that Assad, what he's doing to people over there. I mean, this is pretty brutal stuff. But it's no more or no less brutal than what we did in Iraq and what the Taliban has done in Afghanistan and what we've done there and what's going on in Pakistan and what the Israelis have done to the Palestinians and what the Lebanese have done to. I mean, it just, man. Sometimes I, maybe you too, just want to scream, stop, for Christ's sake. Can anybody stop? Can anybody ever stop? Can it just cease and desist? Can't the world just stop for a moment? Just stop the slaughter and the dictators and the lies and the Tea Party and the totalitarians and the capitalists and just stop and just stop. Jesus Christ, have you been reading the paper? Do you look at the paper? I mean, just get a copy of America's paper. No, hell no, not USA Today. That's a piece of garbage. Just pick up the New York Times and look at in you know, the world section, international section, which is the first section in the paper. Flip through it. Holy yumpin' yimini. I mean, you flip through the first 16 pages of the New York Times, even when the WikiLeaks, the new document dump is not published like it was today, when it's just your standard New York Times coverage of what's going on. Say what you want about the New York Times. You know, oh yeah, they're capitalist pigs or, you know, say anything you want to say, but their international coverage is, fairly extensive. And just do it. Just, if you subscribe to the Times, I'm sure you're already doing it. You go through the first 12, 14, 16 pages of New York Times every morning, and you're sitting there, and I swear to God, your coffee will start, your hand that holds your coffee mug will start shaking. It's just one story of either revolution or upheaval or suppression or oppression, and it's all bloody now. It used to be very quietly. Done. You know, the Mubarak would send a secret police out and they would snag a couple of human rights activists and take them back and cut their tongues out, gouge out their eyes, cut off their fingers, and then bury them somewhere. And nobody was all the wiser. They would accept American detainees or captives from Guantanamo and take them into a room and torture them and anally rape them with pipes or whatever happened to be the weapon of choice at the time, or attach electrodes to their testicles and jolt them in a way that would be indescribable, I'm sure. Or, you know, Syria or the Chinese. The Chinese now, they're getting a little bit pissed off. Too many Christians hanging out in public over in China. And I read that today. Here, there's a picture of Chinese police in Beijing. I guess they're police, paramilitary, military, militia. I don't know what the hell they are. They're in uniforms. They have weapons. Dragging this guy away who, according to the article, was just trying to preach the gospel of Jesus. I mean, no matter where you look, right? Drone aircraft, another, what was it, last week? Another 18 or 20 or 25 or 26 people in Pakistan, including women and children, just blown into chunks of garbage by a U.S. drone strike. Who fires those? They have somebody sitting in, what, Texas, Maryland? London? Where? You know, I mean, I've heard all kinds of stories. Is it a man? Is it a woman? It is somebody in their 20s? Is it a specialist? Is it someone who's been in the military 30 years? Is it an expert on counterterrorism? Or is it someone, it was an expert on weaponry? They look at the screen, they get the target coordinates from, aircraft, from drone aircraft, or AWACS or something flying above, or maybe Google Earth. I mean, who knows? They get the coordinates. coordinates, and they push a button on a video screen. It's a game. It's a goddamn game. They just push a button. And they watch, I guess, as the target goes and disappears. And then the word comes back that, oops, sorry, yeah, we got an insurgent, but we also got, let's see, 7 children, 9 women, 3 old guys, a goat, 6 school teachers, a local tax collector, and an imam. So, you know, you get collateral damage, man. What are you going to do? I mean, do that. Look at the New York Times. Go ahead. Go ahead. That's your assignment. Just look. Just take a look. It's a ritual for me. And I'm starting to not. I'm starting to not do it because it's just getting worse and worse. Every time I pick up the Times in the morning, you know, I walk up to the road to get it. And on the way back, I just get a feeling that blood is running out of my fingers and, you know, down my pants leg. All I'm doing is carrying the New York Times and, you know, with just the right amount of, wake and bake, I can feel the whole thing getting squishy and bloody in my hands before I make it back to the first cup of coffee. Ooh. So you get 3 U.S. senators going on television on Easter Sunday advocating the assassination of Muammar Gaddafi. Is that a good thing? On Sunday, British Foreign Secretary William Hague refused to rule out a NATO decision to deploy Predator drones to attempt to assassinate Gaddafi. William Hague, or Hague, declared, quote, who and what is a legitimate target depends on how they behave. Son of a bitch, really? And according to James Cogan, writing at World Socialist website, WSWS.org, efforts to kill Gaddafi or his family members appear to be already taking place. Among a number of sites bombed in Tripoli over the weekend was a bunker complex near the Libyan leader's compound. 3 people reportedly killed. CNN reported that a major ammunition dump was bombed. Blah, 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 blah. Of course, this is, you know, it was Reagan, wasn't it, that ordered an attack on Gaddafi's tent and it killed his stepdaughter all those years ago? Last week, NATO Commander General Charles Bouchard warned civilians. How do you do that? How do you warn the civilians in Libya? You're a NATO commander and you're sitting somewhere in, I don't know where, Paris, London, Rome, where? And you warn civilians in Libya to keep away from alleged military targets. What is an alleged military target? Who alleges? Do the citizens of Libya know what is being alleged as a military target? Do kids playing in the street, do they know that they're near an alleged military target? We'll be right back.
Back to La Brea.
Well, I sat there at the table and acted real naive. I knew that topless lady had something up her sleeve. Well, she danced.
For the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Debbie Newell, who has a message. There's a rumor Malloy's coming to the West Coast. Can we hold a car wash fundraiser to get you to also stop in L.A.? You would meet some people like Nicholas 62, Rita, Tim, Amy, David, Stephen, Karen, and many, many more. Please come to L.A. Please come to Boston in the summer, springtime. Thanks, Debbie. Thanks for the sponsorship and the invitation. That's very kind. Very kind. Back to this suggestion or a plea by Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican Senator John McCain, and Republican Senator Joe Lieberman. Oh, I'm sorry, Independent Senator Joe Lieberman, to kill Obama and, in Lieberman's case, his family. Last week, NATO commander, as I mentioned, where is this? Yeah, General Charles Bouchard. We almost got caught there by the commercials. I had to end that segment quick. He warned civilians to keep away from alleged military targets. And, of course, my question is, do the civilians in a military dictatorship that has been in effect for 41 years, do they know what is an alleged military target, a determination made in Rome or Paris or London or the United States by military planners that want Libya's oil or want Gaddafi gone or a combination of both or whatever? How do the people walking by an alleged military target in downtown Tripoli or wherever, how does that civilian on his or her way to go buy some groceries or a rug, how do they know that they happen to be walking right in front of alleged military target, just as some 27-year-old sitting at a military base somewhere pulls or pushes a button and boom, boom, the whole place disappears in a cascade of cement and mortar and dust and heads and arms and children's torsos. I mean, how do you know what an alleged military target is? Anyway, the Libyan news agency reported on Easter that NATO aircraft bombed water supply and sewage systems in the Gaddafi-held towns. Aren't they all held by Gaddafi? Of Al-Qums and Sirte? Remember, during the NATO air war against Yugoslavia in 1999, power plants and roads and rail lines and water systems were bombed to terrorize the civilian population. And don't forget, during a shock and awe against the citizens of Baghdad and the people of Iraq, water systems, rail lines, roads, power plants were bombed and destroyed in an attempt to subdue and totally demoralize and therefore end resistance by a civilian population. War is a bitch, isn't it? It's just so many bad things happen. You'd think, well, no, I guess not. No, you wouldn't think that after thousands of years of recorded human history that we'd figure out a better way to handle these things, right? Nah, that'll never happen. It just kind of struck me to find out that three United States senators were calling for the murder of an individual, in this case, Muammar Gaddafi. But only in that I haven't heard it for a while. You know, there have been attempts to assassinate leaders, you know, by the U.S., leaders that we don't like, all kinds of, look at how many times have we tried to murder Fidel Castro? I mean, check that out. Check everything from poison ink pens to, I don't know, nuclear bugs or beetles or something. You know, it's just insane. And why murder Castro? Why not years and years, decades ago? Why not just sit down with them and say, okay, you're an agrarian reformer. Okay. Let's do some agrarian reform here. Nah, hell no. I know that's ridiculous of me to say things like that. I know. I shouldn't say things like that. You can't deal with a communist dictator, ever. What else? I think that's it. Oh, here it is. Yeah. This was from 3 days ago. Good Friday. Deadly drone strike by U.S. may fuel anger in Pakistan. An American drone attack killed 23 people in North Waziristan on Friday. This is from the Times. Pakistani military officials said the strike came a day after the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Admiral Mike Mullen, met with the chief of Pakistani military and appealed to Pakistan to do more to fight the militants who use North Waziristan as a base from which to attack United States and NATO forces in Afghanistan. Why are we there again? Why are we in Afghanistan? Friday's attack could further anti-drone sentiment. Jesus, what the hell kind of a statement is that? Anti-drone sentiment? Oh, my God. Among the Pakistani public. A government official in North Waziristan told Pakistani reporters that five children and four women were among the 23 who were killed. Friday's attack could further fuel anti-drone sentiment among the Pakistani public. Think of that sentence tonight right before you go to sleep, huh? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.